This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
Spend all your time waiting. I'm picking the better team, not the better story. So the 49ers, they're going to beat the Chiefs.
And they have done it. Chiefs are Super Bowl champions here in Miami.
The 49ers, they have a better offense statistically.
20-yard penalty, a first down, first and goal, pass, open, touchdown, Kelce, Chiefs are back in it.
Jimmy Garoppolo deserves more credit than he's getting.
This is Pitt. Kendall Fuller up to get it. Garoppolo able to stay upright. Breland is there for Kansas City.
They have a better defense. Nobody is going to dispute that.
A second and six. Williams makes a cut and will roll into the end zone for the touchdown.
History has taught us the better team wins, even if that better team doesn't have the better quarterback.
Mahomes throws, pass, caught. Williams, touchdown. Kansas City jumps on top.
I'm picking the better team, not the better story.
I'm going to go get the biggest cheeseburger you've ever seen. Prime, the biggest one. Might be a double.
I stand by all of that. Aaron will give us some poetry in a bit as our resident Chiefs fan on site. I don't think there's anybody to blame on the 49ers. My initial reaction was the pile on Shanahan, but he wasn't the one that got called for a false start to kill a drive up 20-17. Up 20-10. He wasn't one that overthrew Deebo Samuel as well. Up 20-17, play action been working the entire game. They had play action on 2nd and 5. Kittle was open across the field. Chris Jones made a good play. He tipped the ball. 3rd down and 5. A lot of pressure, but Kittle was wide open across the middle. A coach did his job to open up receivers. 1st and 2nd reads for Garoppolo. And they just didn't execute. Down 24-20, they had a final shot. And they schemed something up to get Emmanuel Sanders down the field. Garoppolo just didn't put enough air underneath of it. I'm not blaming Garoppolo either. Like Jimmy G, he was 18 of 21. Heading into the final stretch. He was probably the favorite to win the MVP at that point. It was either him or Deebo Samuel. He didn't allow the 21 points. It's kind of like the issue I had bringing up the Atlanta Super Bowl. Yeah, maybe you don't throw the ball allowing for a sack to take you out of field goal range, but did Kyle Shanahan allow 31 unanswered points to the New England Patriots? I don't think so. There was a defense out there, too, that I was told last night, the best one we've seen all year long, and they allowed 21 points in about 7 minutes. Oh, but it might have been the refs. I was watching with the San Francisco Niners fan, big friend of mine, really good friend of mine, and that was his narrative. Oh, it's the referees because of the Kittle push-off. Letter of the law, it was the right call. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. And then, from that point on, it was for sure a defensive pass interference in the end zone. The play at the pylon with Williams, that was the go-ahead touchdown. You couldn't really overturn the call because, yes, he stepped out of bounds, but we just didn't know where the ball was, and it was so close. Bill Vinovich did the right thing saying that the call stands versus saying that it was confirmed. That told us everything we needed to know. And San Francisco got breaks too. Tyreek Hill, that drop was reviewed and they got the right call there. Jimmy G didn't get called for the delay of game on 4th down and 10. Their last heave at 24-20 down. It's just lazy to accuse the refs of being biased. It's lazy just to pin everything on a coach when something goes south in the ultimate team sport. And the same thing for the quarterback as well. Just give Kansas City the credit. That's what I'm wanting to do today. I was wrong in my game pick. I was 6-1 everywhere else when it came to our bets best. Our best bets. On the season, 50-45-3. So about 53% we batted this year, which is decent. It wasn't like 60% a year ago, but it was just decent. I do want to spend some time on Kansas City, though. Darren Gant could have joined us from ProFootballTalk.com in a little less than 10 minutes. The Chiefs, they're about to rule the NFL for the next 5 years. They are excellent in the three most important categories: coach, quarterback, organization. The organization stuff often gets forgotten, but let's not forget, the LA Chargers, they were 11-5 last year, didn't make the playoffs this year. Why? They let the Melvin Gordon stuff hang in the air. They were cheap with some of their contracts. Some of the drama with the new stadium, politics. They let that seep into that locker room. And even though they had talent, they couldn't have back-to-back successful years. That's on Dean Spanos. That's on the front office. That's on ownership. The Houston Texans. It's a mess in that ownership room. So not even Deshaun Watson can get that team past the second round with Bill O'Brien. The Rams with Stan Kroenke. Great the last 2 years, but bad front office, bad decisions made with draft picks and trading that stuff away. I don't care how good some of the players on that team is. I don't care how great Sean McVay is. You can't overcome bad ownership and a bad front office. There's a reason why the Browns have been as bad as long as they have. Also, nobody in the AFC is on par with Kansas City. New England, if Brady comes back, maybe they have one last crack at it. Tops 2 years. The Ravens, nobody cares. Win a playoff game, Lamar Jackson. Houston, Bill O'Brien. The Steelers, they're aging out. Lose AB, lose Le'Veon Bell, Ben Roethlisberger. How much longer does he have left? Meanwhile, if they were in the NFC, it'd be a totally different story. The NFC, Aaron Rodgers, he's at his prime still. Back end of his prime, but still his prime, getting to the NFC Championship game. The Saints, even when they lose Drew Brees, Teddy Bridgewater was 5-0, and Taysom Hill, he proved to be a pretty significant weapon for New Orleans. Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, they're still together, that tandem. The Dallas Cowboys, great roster around Dak Prescott. Good line, Zeke Elliott, defensive players in place. They just need good leadership. We'll see if Mike McCarthy can provide that. The Eagles, if they're healthy, we saw what they did with Nick Foles playing quarterback just a few years ago. So I think the NFC is a far more dangerous conference than the AFC is. Plus, Pat Mahomes, it's hard to really give a good comparison to him. He's a little bit Russell Wilson. He's a little bit Brett Favre. Except neither Russell Wilson or Brett Favre won a Super Bowl MVP in their careers. Pat Mahomes did it at 24 as the youngest to do that. In terms of winning an actual league MVP award and Super Bowl MVP, here are the quarterbacks to accomplish both those feats in the last 30 years. Montana, Steve Young, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Pat Mahomes. Those six guys. So when you're in that type of company, man, you're going to go on a run. And Andy Reid is 61 years old. Some say, oh, he's on the last legs of his career. Bill Belichick is 67. Mac Brown is 68 at North Carolina. Pete Carroll is 68 years old. There is still a lot for these guys to accomplish. And I think they're going to rule the AFC and rule the NFL for the next 5 years. Aaron, this is a lot of Chiefs talk. I want you to accent it the way it needs to be accented. With one of the segments we haven't done nearly enough, we've learned you have a talent, and that talent is slam poetry. Do you need to turn the lights down at all to give us your Chiefs poem?
Yeah. We're going to get this artistic integrity going.
That's right. Even though it's for radio, you make sure that the lights get turned down. That way we can maintain the quality of the bit here, the integrity of it.
Very important.
What is this one called?
We'll call this one Joy. Joy. Coursing through my body like fireworks over Kansas City. Since 1993, I've watched the Chiefs misery, 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 week after week. Oh, but I knew since last year's AFC Championship loss that this year, Patrick LeVon Mahomes would rise to the level of boss. First-year starter, MVP. Second-year, Super Bowl, MVP. You get the feels, the come-up is real. No more misery, bless Andy Reid. I can see through the fog, I didn't know goats could sound like Kermit the Frog. You know where to find me if you want beef, in the land of the brave, in the home of the Chiefs.
Hold up. Did you just rhyme MVP with MVP?
I did.
Also, you would have thought this year in the NFL particularly, we would have known Pat Mahomes' middle name is Lamar.
LeVon.
Oh, I thought you said LeVar.
No, it's LeVon.
It's LeVon.
Yeah.
All right. I must have misheard you.
Yeah, he's LeVon Mahomes when he's running. He's Patrick Mahomes when he's killing you in the pocket. And he was killing you with both. That's when he's Patrick LeVon Mahomes, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Every NFL state, every state that has an NFL team, has a writer who's given a Pro Football Hall of Fame vote. That way, no story is uncovered. A story, say, like Sam Mills, who, for the first time, was a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He didn't get in, but Darren Gant apparently was the guy in that room in Miami who was trying to make the case for Mills, telling Sam Mills stories to people who maybe haven't heard them before. I'm interested in those stories and also for his thoughts on some of the aftermath stories regarding Super Bowl 54. Darren Gant from ProFootballTalk.com and NBC Sports will join us to fill us in on those things next.
You could try getting your sports news and talk somewhere else.
My life sucks quite enough already, thank you.
Best to leave it right here on The Drive with Josh Graham.
One of my favorites to talk NFL, Darren Gant, is now with us from ProFootballTalk.com and NBC Sports. He was in Miami for Super Bowl 54. Much of the media, at least on television and radio's reaction to the game, centers on San Francisco blowing the game. Is it Jimmy Garoppolo or Kyle Shanahan choking? How much responsibility do they bear? More than Kansas City, what they did to steal it in the fourth quarter. And I find this a little bit interesting considering San Francisco seemed to have opportunities that were presented because of Kyle Shanahan, like Greg or George Kittle open across the field on a 2nd and 5 and then on a 3rd and 5 when Garoppolo was flushed and threw it away when the game was 20-17 at that point. When the game was 20-10, you have the false start penalty. And it seems that a lot of things are being attached to Shanahan, despite the fact that the defense, which was the best in the NFL all year long, allowed 21 points unanswered in the final 7 minutes of this game. So I ask you, Darren, how much blame do you think Shanahan and Garoppolo deserve?
Oh, all of it. Yeah, they should all be fired and drunk from the league. Now, here's the thing. It is complicated. You went through a number of factors. I'm having a hard time putting a lot of this on Kyle Shanahan because we were sitting here yesterday in a press box, and when Kyle's not calling timeouts right before the end of the first half, I was like, oh, my God, he didn't trust his quarterback today. And we should have probably known that after they go through the NFC Championship and Jimmy throws it 8 times. But he wasn't – at 10-10, he was good. He was like, all right, get the ball coming out of second half. It's 10-10 right now. We've got the Chiefs right where we want them. You can only game plan around your quarterback for so long. Eventually, he's going to have to make a play. And in that moment – you know, Kyle Shanahan decided he didn't want to give Jimmy Garoppolo a chance to screw anything up right before halftime, and that was probably the first sign. That's when you realized, oh, Kyle's calling this game plan scared. And can Jimmy Garoppolo get better? Can Jimmy, you know, push through those situations? I mean, possibly. some guys in the past who, you know, didn't have early success and then, you know, were able to figure things out in the playoffs. But it's going to take some work. As far as that defense, I think those guys just held on for as long as they could. I can't remember if this was a conversation you and I had before the Super Bowl or I had with somebody else, but I said, you know, the 49ers are kind of playing it like John Fox. You try to clutch, grab, play defense, shorten the game as long as you can, so you got a chance in the last 2 minutes. Well, that's fine until you're playing a guy who can score 3 touchdowns in 2 minutes.
Darren's on Twitter, at Darren Gant. Read his stuff, profootballtalk.com. So I think San Francisco is the better team, the more complete team. Kansas City, they won the game. They have the better quarterback, the better coach. So I ask you, over the next 5 years, who would you buy more stock in, San Francisco or Kansas City? Because I think the NFC has the younger quarterbacks and maybe a little bit more competition than the AFC does, more proven competition, I think. But at the same time, as I mentioned, San Francisco probably a better team and also younger. Who do you buy stock in?
Well, and it depends on which way they go. I mean, here's where things are going to get complicated. You know, Kansas City is going to have to give Patrick Mahomes a contract sooner rather than later that'll make him the highest paid player in football. If they do that too soon, they might not be able to keep a Chris Jones, who, oh, by the way, made the plays coming down the stretch defensively for the Chiefs last night. He's not going to be cheap. So it's going to be curious to see the moves they make to kind of work around that window that we've talked about so often where you get that cheap rookie quarterback. I mean, that's, you know, go ask Sean McVay what it's like when you pay the quarterback, you know, and then you've got to put team around him again. That's going to be tricky, but as long as Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid are on that roster, I'm going to like their chances. What I'm going to be curious to see is how much rope Jimmy actually gets. I mean, obviously, you know, they'll go into next season with him, but if next season turns into, how long do they want to commit? Now, that's a good team regardless who the quarterback is. I mean, we've said they're game planning around a quarterback. What if in another year, year and a half, they've decided they've seen enough of the Jimmy Garoppolo experience and decide to just draft him another quarterback and find another cheap guy and keep backfilling? I like the job Kyle Shanahan's done, turning those guys around in a hurry and taking advantage of last year's misfortune. Because, listen, Nick Bosa was an animal last night. He was almost the best player on the field, not named Mahomes or Damian Williams. And, you know, you keep stacking up guys like that, and you're always going to have an opportunity. It's just a matter of what direction they take with their quarterback.
How much optimism should Carolina Panther fans have when they see this Niner team get to the Super Bowl and how quickly they've rebuilt under a new coach who's in his third year, and also in the same period of time they parted ways from a controversial Super Bowl mobile quarterback like Carolina might have to? And, oh, yeah, let's not forget San Francisco was trying to recover from the surprise retirement of their all-NFL middle linebacker. Should Carolina Panther fans look at this and say, okay, we have the innovative young offensive minds. It's probably time for us to part ways with the controversial mobile quarterback. And at the same time, maybe we need to build through the draft the way like the Niners did in drafting a Nick Bosa who was dominant last night.
You know, I think they can take a measure of hope in the fact that it's the NFL, and if you're smartly run, you can turn things around in a hurry if you find the quarterback. If they get rid of Cam Newton, obviously it changes the calculus on everything they're doing this year. You know, and you're going from, you know, do you find a veteran backup or do you do something for to develop somebody else for the future, because you kind of saw what you got in Kyle Allen, or are you just starting over from scratch? Because, I mean, if they come out of the draft with, you know, Justin Herbert and a bunch of guys, you know, then that's a different formula than if they try to milk one more year out of Cam Newton and see how he's going to be. I mean, I think
Cam's got tremendous value despite the injuries and despite the contract, because he's so good at football. And if they don't want him, somebody else is going to, and I could see him playing well, but it's the NFL. You have an opportunity. That's the reward for stinking and going through the seasons like San Francisco went through last year. You know, Jimmy gets hurt. They go 4-12. The reward is Nick Bosa, who was just a straight-up beast in the Super Bowl. So every now and then that happens. You just got to make sure to take advantage of it when the opportunity arises.
And let me add this. San Francisco, here were five of their last six, or make it four of their last five top 10 picks that they've had since transitioning away from Jim Harbaugh and going through the Chip Kelly stuff before arriving at Kyle Shanahan. Nick Bosa, McGlinchey on the offensive line, DeForest Buckner on defense, Solomon Thomas, who's been a bit of a rotational player on that D-line, Eric Armstead. Those are the top 10 picks that San Francisco had, and they are four or five of the most important players that they've brought to the Super Bowl this year. The Carolina Panthers, they have a top 10 pick, and the last four times Marty Herney made a top 10 pick, they were Julius Peppers, Jordan Gross, Cam Newton, and Luke Kuechly. So we'll see what happens when we get to the draft, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about the draft when we get there. But in addition to working at Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports, Darren Gant also is our state's Hall of Fame voter. And I love what you put on Twitter talking about Sam Mills and the opportunity you have to speak to his story. This is, I think, case in point, the reason why every fan base, or I guess every NFL team, gets somebody who covers that beat, gets a Hall of Fame vote. So everybody's right. Story is covered. The Hall of Famers in terms of modern era inductees, Steve Atwater, Isaac Bruce, Steve Hutchinson, Edrin James, Troy Polamalu. Sam Mills got closer than he's ever been this year. What was that room like, and what were some of the things you were bringing up to try and let Sam Mills' story be known?
Well, and I think, too, people in the Carolinas know full well what Sam Mills meant to that franchise. He is basically, and the point I've tried to make is, Sam Mills created everything the Carolina Panthers are about. Not just, you know, he didn't build the stadium, he didn't pick the teams, he didn't coach, or he wasn't the head coach, but he was their substance in the early years. And the point I tried to make to my fellow voters is, this guy was not just a mascot. This guy was not a short guy who overcame. This is not Rudy running down kicks on special teams. He was your best player in 1996 when you went from a second-year expansion team to the NFC Championship game. And Sam dragged those teams along, not because he was inspirational, but because he was great at football, and also he became an inspirational figure, you know, in his later years, bringing up young players, and then as a coach, you know, obviously with Keep Pounding and everything he meant to that team during the Super Bowl run in 03, it's hard to take his name out of any conversation about the Carolina Panthers, but he was a great player before he ever got here. He was great in New Orleans. He was the centerpiece of the Dome Patrol defense. He was great in the USFL. He was, a lot of people believe who were involved in that league, he was the best defensive player in that league. That league also included Reggie White. So I think Sam's got an incredible resume. I look forward to telling people. I think in a lot of ways, when guys spend their careers on teams without great quarterbacks who don't have top-end playoff success, and again, Sam Mills spent his career playing with Bobby Hebert and Billy Joe Hobert and Kerry Collins and Steve Berline, that's not exactly conducive to winning Super Bowls. So, the guy got as much out of a 5'9" frame as anybody ever could. You know, the other point I made when we were talking about Sam and his legacy, I said, you know, Zach Thomas was also a finalist in that room. And I said, without Sam Mills, there may never be Zach Thomas, because I think Sam changed the way people look at undersized football players. And he probably created a lot of opportunities for a lot of people. Listen, I know I ramble on when I start talking about Sam. You should see me in that room when I get a microphone in my hand. One of my friends from New York said, when I start talking, I sound like a Baptist preacher. I could preach the sermon of Sam Mills every year for the next however many years. And I hope that I have more opportunities to, because I believe, you know, and I say this all the time, of that list of 15, there are probably 13 or 14 Hall of Famers on that list. I think Sam Mills is one of them.
Are you allowed to reveal who you voted after the fact?
You know, the Hall doesn't really want to go down that road, but I don't care. I am... You know, I'm a big believer in transparency, and my ballot was a lot like the final the Final Five, we didn't do it exactly the way we've done it in the past. Basically, we cut it to a list of 10 and then vote for our top five. And when I voted top five, I voted Polamalu, Atwater, Hutchinson, Boselli, Ike Bruce. And on, you know, Tony Boselli didn't get in, Edgerrin James got in instead of him. But otherwise, I was four of the five. And that's where it's difficult, because I could have, you know, had Edgerrin James on that list easily instead of Ike Bruce, justified. Or Alan Faneca instead of Steve Hutchinson, justified. So yeah, it's really splitting hairs, but I go in each year, you know, intent on voting for the five best guys on the ballot in front of me at the time. And I believe, you know, like I said, all five of those guys I put my name next to, I think will be Hall of Famers.
You happy to be back from Miami?
Very happy to be back from Miami. It was a good week, but it was a long week. We're very tired and need some sleep. But, yeah, it was a great trip. I mean, it was the spectacle everybody anticipated from Miami.
Yeah, well, you get some sleep. You've been great all throughout this year. I know we'll be chatting sometime soon. Appreciate you spending the time, and I'm glad you made it out of Miami alive.
Yep, we're alive and in one piece. So we'll talk to you guys soon. Y'all have a good all season.
That's Darren Gant on Twitter. Yep, you as well. On Twitter, at Darren Gant, profootballtalk.com. Is Sammy Watkins a bust? Last night, I was watching, and there were a handful of people who were just convinced Watkins is a bust because he was drafted, I think, in the top five. I think Buffalo Bills took him. And see if you can find what they gave up in order to acquire that pick, in order to select a wide receiver. Now, it's on the team if you're trading that high up to take a wide receiver. There's only so much value they can give you, just like a corner, in my opinion. But Sammy Watkins, that was the 2013 draft, same year that the Panthers took Kelvin Benjamin. That's the same year that Odell Beckham Jr. was drafted. Mike Evans was drafted. I think Brandon Cooks maybe was taken that year as well. So a lot of wide receivers went that year. What was the trade package?
They sent their ninth pick as well as their first and fourth round pick for the next year.
Wow. So they gave up two first round draft picks to bring in Sammy Watkins. Should careers be viewed differently in terms of production based on where you're drafted? Like, is a solid career a solid career no matter what? Or if you're taken in the top three, the weight of your career better be denser than someone, say, who is a undrafted player? Because the way I view it is, I think Ted Ginn Jr. was a top 10 pick too out of Ohio State. If you last as long as Ted Ginn has, and you're a starter for a Super Bowl team, and the Panthers were in 2015 with Ted Ginn as their primary receiver, one of their primary receivers, I don't think that's a failed career. I don't think you're a bust. Sammy Watkins, would you call him the Chiefs' number two receiver next to Tyreek Hill, or number three?
As far as receivers, yes, he'd be number two. But as far as receiving options, he'd probably be three or four.
Right. He was a starting wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
That's the point I'm making.
Right.
If you are a starter for a Super Bowl team, a team that wins a Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
Also, he must have had four or five catches last night.
With contributions.
Right. Yeah. It's hard for me to say 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. That in your seventh season, if you're contributing in the Super Bowl, starting and winning a Super Bowl, that you're a bust.
Yeah, you're definitely not a bust. You know what the other part about that is? He's 26.
He's only 26
He's
years
26
old?
He's 26 years old.
I can't believe that. How's that possible?
Getting in the league wild young.
26 years old.
He's like 26, 27.
Yeah. So even though he didn't live up to being number three in the draft, I think there's a middle place between Hall of Famer and bust. Sammy Watkins is a good player. If you're a starting wide receiver for an offense like the Chiefs and you win the Super Bowl with contributions in your seventh year, you are a good NFL player. You're not somebody who's out of the league not getting their second contract, right? We've seen a lot of those. Now, you might get more opportunity because of where you were slotted to go early on. And I acknowledge that on the day that Vic Beasley isn't going to get a deal from the Atlanta Falcons, and he's certainly going to get another contract in a way maybe an undrafted player doesn't. But to say he's a bust, I just think that's too far. And I thought that was an interesting conversation last night that I was having at my Super Bowl party. Robert would have hated that.
I would not have hated it, but I also am not a fan of calling people a bust after they've left the team that drafted him. Was he a bust for the Bills? No, because they got to beat the Patriots once with him. But he left the Bills. Like, even if he wasn't good, he would have been a bust for the Bills. He can no longer be labeled a bust through the draft. He can be a bust for a player. Like Matt.
But that's what I'm saying. A bust of a player.
Yeah, they're two different things completely. So, no, it would not have been a bust for them. Matt Elam. For the Ravens, he was a bust. He was out of the league in 4 years, and he didn't
Vernon
really play.
Vernon Butler, a bust.
Yeah, didn't really play.
Vernon Bustler.
But if they come back, if Vernon Bustler comes back and plays for the Saints, and he has, like, averages 4 sacks a year and some tackles for a loss, he's not a bust anymore. He was a bust for the Panthers, but he's not a bust as a player.
Yes, Aaron.
I would also try to remember who was throwing Sammy Watkins footballs when he got to Buffalo.
EJ Manuel, let's go.
Okay, Tyrod Taylor. Who else?
Hey, Tyrod Taylor is the number one QB rating for the Bills in their whole history. He's the number one quarterback.
I've never heard a bigger indictment on QB rating. Robert, what do you got in taking to the house?
He was a good quarterback. Y'all can't sleep on him like that. I know you don't like to talk politics on here, but the one election coming up that everyone is going
to
be talking
about. I've got a feeling this has nothing to do with politics. We'll take it to the house next.
Welcome to the show that cloned the Loch Ness Monster. And got her drunk.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
I need to publicly apologize to J-Lo and Shakira, who I both know are huge fans of this show. I was wrong about this Super Bowl halftime show. I may have been wrong about Demi Lovato. Was I wrong about her? I didn't think the anthem was going to be that great, but then it was glorious when I said it was going to be under 2 minutes and 3 seconds, and it turned out being what, like a buck 45?
Yep.
It was a short anthem, so I guess in that regard, it was a good anthem. I was 6-2 in my bets, except for the, you know, picking the actual game correctly. But the Super Bowl halftime show, it exceeded expectations for me, and I think for the rest of the country, too, because this is the first time I can remember doing a radio show after a halftime show where we're talking about a well-received halftime. I've said it many times that the expectations have been out of whack with the show for years. Whether it was Justin Timberlake, which wasn't well-received, Lady Gaga, we're just picking fun at her jumping and catching a football, Katy Perry came in on a bleeping tiger, like a massive tiger or lion, into her halftime show. But what did we talk about after that game ended? Left Shark. We spent the entire day talking about Left Shark. The Coldplay one was meh. And I say that as probably the biggest Coldplay fan you know. And the Maroon 5 Super Bowl halftime, I thought was fine. I said that on the air, and I had a bunch of people accusing me of just trying to be a contrarian as a result, as if that would be the topic that I choose. The last time I remember a Super Bowl halftime exceeding expectations in the public was Bruno Mars and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I think the reason that was well received was because it exceeded where our expectations were. That's why it was well received. Like, usually the expectations are way up high. This one, it wasn't. Shakira and J-Lo, where's this going to go wrong? And then it didn't. It was just perfectly delivered. And we learned as a country together what butt cleavage was. We learned what it sounded like when Aaron Gabriel saw the Kansas City Chiefs holding up the Lombardi Trophy for the first time in his lifetime. It sounded like this. What's the best tweet you saw about that? Like, now that's a meme. Robert believes she's just trying to capture clout.
For sure. And Shakira, it worked.
I don't think for sure.
It worked, 100%. I think about the secret conch from SpongeBob when they all have to go this noise right here.
Yeah, the magic conch.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I thought third down for the Hokies at Lane Stadium. They have that little turkey sound that happens. We can agree that's what it mostly sounds like, right? It sounds like a turkey sound that she's making there.
Sure. I can hear that.
Gosh. Who won the halftime show? Shakira or J-Lo?
I really liked Ali G, the dude that was dressed up like the Silver Surfer that came out.
Wasn't that Bad Bunny?
Pretty sure that was Ali G. I've seen the movie a lot of times. That looked just like him.
Are you kidding right now?
No. That was Sacha Baron Cohen as Ali G. Who else would it have been?
Well, I just said Bad Bunny.
Yeah, and that's obviously a made-up name. Who the hell's name is Bad Bunny? Come on, Josh.
Wes Miller's going to join us in about 10 minutes from UNCG. Former Tar Heel player ahead of Duke, North Carolina this week. 336-777-1600. What did you think of the halftime show on Twitter? At Sports Hub Triad. I thought it was just really well done. And if Jay-Z had any role in it, good for him. Where Shakira does the first half and then J-Lo for a half and then they're back out there together. She being J-Lo has the Puerto Rican flag. Get kids involved with American flags on the t-shirt. Everybody feels great. Except, I think there was an expiration date where it no longer was good in the age range of people. Like, our parents, there's no way that they liked the show. Like, my dad, he was ranting about, not enough singing. I need dancing. I don't need any more dancing, I should say. How was it received in the Walsh household?
They were not happy.
Your parents?
Yeah, my dad was happy. He loved it. My stepmom, not so happy. She thought it was inappropriate for children.
It definitely was the most pornographic halftime show we've ever seen. And that even includes the halftime show that actually had a body part exposed.
Yeah, my she was like, this is just terrible. This is at 8:30. Kids are still awake. And if you're listening, that's exactly what you sounded like. So I'm not making fun of you, but I am. I'm sorry.
So maybe the right play for figuring out the halftime show isn't trying to land the biggest star currently in entertainment or in music, but trying to find somebody who doesn't have an agenda to play, that doesn't have an album to sell. Somebody you know is just going to go on stage and play the hits. That's what Shakira and J-Lo did. Like Shakira, both of those musicians, did they play a song by them that was written past 2010? I don't think so. Waiting for Tonight, I'm Real, Jenny from the Block, and Shakira, starting with She-Wolf, Whenever, Wherever, Hips Don't Lie. It seems they're specifically trying to hit a demo. Probably about 30 to 40-year-old man and woman. And those two, they fit that demo perfectly. You're in high school when Jenny from the Block is a thing, or Shakira was a big thing in this country, and she's massive worldwide. It was, in hindsight, a very smart selection to have those two. But if we're using that same criteria to try and pick a halftime show in Tampa next year, what do you think's the play? Because I don't think Tampa has a lot of culture. I don't think we're going to do the Latina or Latino halftime show after we just did that in Miami. Plus, anybody who's ever been to St. Pete versus Miami can tell you that it's very different culturally, even though you're in the same state. I don't think it's as simple as, yeah, Taylor Swift's really big right now, or Justin Bieber. Let's throw them out on stage. Who's somebody who's been out of it for 5 or 6 years that was big in the late 90s and throughout the 2000s, you could just thrust out onto a stage and ask to play the hits because they're not trying to shill a new album on us? Yes, Aaron.
Lil Jon.
He would be perfect.
I saw Lil Jon in Greenville, America 2 years ago, and he had massive dad vibes going on. He had like an orange striped polo shirt, like the one that you would just throw on when you were forced to go to church as a kid. That's what he was wearing. He had cargo shorts on. It wasn't the greatest look for Lil Jon. But that's not bad. That's a pretty good route to take. I think we're aiming in the right direction here. Anybody else? Maybe like Avril Lavigne?
Nobody checking for Avril Lavigne right now.
And yeah, she got cloned anyway. That's not even the original one. I think everybody knows that now.
You buy that conspiracy theory?
Oh, yeah. Look at her hands. Hand size. Totally different. Watch her grip the mic before the cloning process and after. I'm telling you.
Would Tim McGraw be a big enough draw? Or is that just massive in the South and isn't necessarily going to reach a worldwide audience?
Yeah, I think if they had the Super Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama... then Tim McGraw would definitely
well,
be
it's
a
not about it's yeah, not about me, who's in the actual stadium. It's about who's watching on TV. You have 150 million people watching.
In that case, no.
Let me answer this with a rhyme. Tim McGraw, hell nah.
Do you have the Dave Grubeck to accent that with? Look at this photograph. Oh, well. Nickelback halftime show. How would that go? I don't know if that would work out very great. If you had Nickelback as the 2021 Super Bowl halftime show. How about Akon? What's Akon been up to? Akon and T-Pain? If you get those two together, maybe magic could be created there. Akon, he's been involved in so many hits.
I think he's over in like Africa building like wells and schools and stuff for kids.
Akon is building a whole city.
Yeah.
Legit.
So if the halftime show was billed as Akon and Lil Jon, are we there? Or do you need to add T-Pain to the mix if you want to go full 2000s hits that you remember, jumping from I'm Sprung to Buy You a Drink and Bartender to all the Lil Jon hits? And of course, I mean, they all are the same song.
Pretty much. It's like ordering
it really
something
is.
At a Spanish restaurant. Like, dun, oh, let me dun, get a dun, taco. Dun.
Like, all it's the all same. The same song. And then Akon.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, that sounds like a kick.
It would be just
show.
As good as yesterday's halftime show. You have all those hits. And massive.
I would love to see T-Pain wearing what Shakira was wearing. That'd be nice.
No. Put Lil Jon in there.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Or... put T-Pain in the monster outfit like he wore in The Masked Singer when he won in season one.
That show is so bad.
You didn't watch after the Super Bowl last night?
No, I did watch, and that's how I know
White
it's
Tiger,
so bad.
White Tiger definitely is Gronk. There's no question in my mind. Oh, this cast of characters has 9 combined Super Bowl appearances. Well, Gronk has most of those, and he's big, and he likes to party, and there are 69 jokes in the actual teasing, and he's massive. Clearly White singing Vanilla Ice. Yeah, that's Gronk. We all know it's Gronk. Lil Wayne got unmasked. He was the robot. Pretty good stuff. 336-777-1600 if you want in on today's show. On Twitter, at SportsHubTriad if you'd like to chime in that way. We'll talk about UNCG basketball and the Duke-North Carolina rivalry with Wes Miller next.
Josh Graham serves up the sports the way Jose's Cantina serves up their gut buster burrito. Have a napkin ready, because it's gonna be messy. You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
We've got something special lined up all week, as we're gonna have former Tar Heel and Blue Devil coaches and players on all throughout the week. Tomorrow, it's going to be the head coach of the Greensboro Swarm, Joe Wolf, who played with Michael Jordan way back when, Eric Montross this week, Chris Spatola, John Swafford, former Tar Heel AD, the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference. But we're now being joined by UNCG head basketball coach Wes Miller, who, of course, was on one of Roy Williams' early Tar Heel teams a little over a decade ago. The Spartans are a really good team this year, as we've covered. Tough weekend when you look at the result, East Tennessee State beating the Spartans 82-65. But Wes, before we get into the rivalry days back when you were playing, I look at this weekend and I see that you guys signed a top 150 player according to Rivals for the first time in UNCG history. Nadine Solomon became the all-time leading scorer in UNCG women's basketball history. And also James Dickey, he jumped to second in the career reboundings list. So I guess all things considered historically, not a bad weekend to be a Spartan. How do you kind of put those things together today, Coach?
Yeah, we'll take our result on the road away, as you said. But other than that, there's just some great stuff going on at UNCG. And not just athletically. There's just great stuff going on all over this campus and in this community. So we're really proud. You know, really proud of the things that are going on over here. I'm certainly really proud of the guys in my program, what they're doing, and the guys that have graduated, what they're doing playing professionally, and guys that have moved on into other careers. So a lot of pride, as you mentioned, but we want to get back in the win column, so hopefully we can have a little more success in that area this week.
And that top 150 signing, Jarrett Hensley, is going to be a Spartan. He is signed. He is the first top 150 recruit to go to UNCG on your watch. Does the SoCon have an even stronger case, you think, this year to have two bids than even a year ago? Because, of course, we know you guys were the first team left out of the field of 64 or 68, however you depend to look at it. But this year, you lose to East Tennessee State, but you beat them earlier in the year. Furman is tough, as we know. Saul Wofford beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Obviously, that team is still a very strong unit, even with Mike Young being in Blacksburg. How do you kind of look at the case for two-bid SoCon this time?
Well, I think the league is deeper, maybe than it's ever been. Certainly, the league has been trending upward, you know, the last 4 years. Every year, it just seems to be a better league in terms of the amount of really competitive teams nationally, the depth of the league. You know, I don't think we have a team like Wofford last year. You know, Wofford ran the table in conference play, won three games in the conference tournament. They went 21-0 in our league. And I think that kind of put us in a different place with a chance to get a second team. I don't think we have a team that's that dominant. But the depth of the league is even better this year than it was last year. And it wouldn't surprise me if at the end of the year there's three, four teams in this league that are as good as all the teams that are getting in at the bottom of the at-large bids there in the NCAA tournament. Whether or not the committee does that or not, you know, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know how the numbers will all shake out in the ranking systems, but I do think we have more quality teams in our league this year from top to bottom than we've ever had.
It's UNCG head basketball coach Wes Miller with us here on Sports Hub Triad. Three consecutive home games for the Spartans starting Wednesday night against the Citadel. Sunday, it's going to be Samford coming to town. Then next week, Coach Prosser and Western Carolina will be visiting the Spartans in Greensboro. That's next Wednesday night. But going back to your playing days, it is North Carolina-Duke on Saturday. We already see the graphic plastered all over the place where the last 100 meetings have been split 50-50 and both teams have scored the same amount of points in those 100 games combined. What's the best story as a player who's been involved in it, either surrounding the rivalry or actually playing in the games, that sticks out to you looking back?
Wow. You know, it's probably a cop-out. I don't think there's any one thing that jumps off the page to me, but, you know, I think everybody you ask that question to will say just the excellence of both programs over such a long period of time, like sustained excellence of both programs. And then you add the proximity being 8 miles away. There's just nothing like it in sports. And it's kind of surreal when you're playing or you're a part of the game, you know, because you grow up hearing about it, you grow up watching it. And it doesn't matter whether you're from the state of North Carolina or not. If you're anywhere, you know, in the world, you know, and you even know what college basketball is, you know what Duke Carolina is. And then all of a sudden you're kind of in the middle of it, and it's just kind of surreal. I mean, the whole sports world stops, you know, just for 24 hours, and it feels like it focuses in just on Carolina Duke. And I just don't think there's anything like it, certainly in college basketball, and it's pretty unique even in sports.
the visiting locker room in Cameron. It's small. It's been described as a dump by a lot of visiting coaches and players. But how great is that condensed space when you win in that place the way you guys did back in 2006?
Well, you know, listen, I've been involved in college basketball now for almost two decades. Every visiting locker room is pretty great when you win. that one's probably the top of the mountain. Just because, you know, generally when you play at Duke, they're, you know, a top 10 team in the nation. We won there my junior year. Not that people remember what year that is, but it was Tyler Hansbrough's freshman year, and yep. Danny Green, and Bobby Frazier and Marcus Ginyard. Those guys were freshmen. Duke was number one in the country, and J.J. Redick was a senior and the player of the year in college basketball. And we went in there and won on his senior night, Sheldon Williams' senior night, and that's probably one of the more fun locker rooms I've ever been a part of. And I've been a part of a lot of pretty good ones.
Here's something I always wondered, though, Wes. That game, the celebration's fun in the interim. When you get back to campus, or if you win in Chapel Hill, when you're celebrating after the fact, what exactly do you do?
Well, you know, most people are aware of this, but if Carolina beats Duke,
uh-huh.
people generally storm Franklin Street. You know, like, everybody just kind of sprints onto the street for a big celebration.
Do players do that too?
Well, so we, you know, I don't know if I don't know what other teams did, but we were a pretty strange bunch back in 2006. And so we were driving back from Durham. And I know we got off the bus and we knew people were all the way up there having fun. And I know a bunch of us tried to sprint up to Franklin Street from the Smith Center as fast as we could. By the time we got up there, everybody was gone. So we got to celebrate in the locker room. We missed the celebration on Franklin Street.
Get a win later on this week, preferably two, Coach. And I'm sure the group text is going to be hopping on Saturday night. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me as always, Josh.
You got it. That is Wes Miller, UNCG head basketball coach. And if you miss any of our guests today or any of the content that we have, the Best Of podcast is on SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Always good to catch up with him. They're going to be in action Wednesday night and then on Sunday, as I mentioned. Okay, I want to shift things back to the Super Bowl. We talked about the halftime show. We haven't had a chance to talk about the commercials in Super Bowl 54. Robert, how many people were you watching the Super Bowl with?
Probably about like 20 or 30. There was a ton of people over at our house.
Do you enjoy larger Super Bowl parties, or do you like it better when there's maybe two or three people, if that?
Oh, I love the parties because it's always people you rarely get to see. And the game is not even such a big deal for me. I'm going to see the highlights. I'm going to hear the stuff that happened. I'm going to see the commercials a million times. And to your point, I haven't seen a lot of these commercials. I like talking to the people at these parties.
To the people. What was the biggest reaction from a commercial?
They really did not like the Google commercial.
Oh, I hated it. I hated the one with the old dude and Loretta.
Yeah.
Awful.
I didn't even watch it when it first started.
Everybody was so quick, racing to the internet to say how great that ad was, and I'm going to cry watching this commercial. Here's what I got to say to Google. Bleep off. Bleep off, Google.
Because
I got two things to say to you. One, I know what you're doing. Right? I'm saying the same thing to you that I said to the folks who created A Dog's Purpose. That movie that you just want to channel some of that Marley and Me energy, get some people crying about dead dogs. Yeah, I know what you're doing, A Dog's Purpose. I don't like it. Bleep off. You're the worst. Google, doing the same thing. Let's have an old guy with dementia talking about his wife, which leads me to number two. There's no chance in hell that he knows how to work that computer.
No way.
Zero chance that he's that proficient that he's talking to Google, that he's talking to the computer. He has no clue how to work that thing. So that commercial's not believable, and also, bleep off, Google.
His VCR is still flashing 12s, if you know what I'm saying. That dude doesn't know how to work the 12, or work the iPad.
12!
The other one that upset my dad was the Stains Can Wait. He was so perturbed by
Charlie Day.
Yeah, I love Charlie Day, but those commercials were kind of just stupid.
Wasn't good
to me, yeah.
I loved the Mountain Dew Bryan Cranston Shining.
Oh, yes, with off of Black-ish.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston.
No. Yes, when
I'm not talking about Anthony Anderson.
No, the woman when he knocks the door down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gives, she is also off Black-ish.
I didn't know that. I don't watch the show.
Very good show.
So, yeah, that's pretty good. Especially when you have the famous scene where the blood's coming out of the elevator and it's all Mountain Dew straining in. Oh, that's great.
The twins' faces was Bryan Cranston's yes! face. It was great. Good
you
stuff.
Are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPC in Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals making up Sports Hub Tryon. We'll get crazy in 30 minutes, which I'm sure is going to be crazy the day after the Super Bowl. We got Darren Gant, who is just getting back to the state of North Carolina from Miami next hour. He is our state's Hall of Fame voter, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. So look forward to chatting with him. Let's see what's going on, though, in the big headlines of the day and what we call, fittingly, the Big Four.
Sail with the pilot for the sea.
Number four on the Big Four, this just in, the Atlanta Falcons aren't going to offer free agent Vic Beasley a new contract, which means the former Clemson defensive end is going to be on the market. Should the Carolina Panthers make a move on him? Carolina's guy? Two states, one team? It does seem like that. He was underutilized. They started drafting a lot of players to kind of accent Beasley, or maybe even the other way around, Beasley accenting him or them. Tack McKinley comes to mind immediately. Seems like a good pass rusher. The Panthers, they only signed Bruce Irvin to a one-year deal. So in my mind, I think Vic Beasley is an upgrade off of Irvin. Carolina's guy, motivated to play the Atlanta Falcons twice a year. I would love if Carolina just said, yep, we're going to go after that guy and assume he's motivated to take on his former team a couple times a year. Robert, what do you think of Vic Beasley being on the market?
Vic is definitely a dude. Like you said, he kind of ended up in a crowded position room in Atlanta. And it would be a good get. You, like you said, you're not bringing back Bruce for another year, potentially. This could be a dude that you extended a contract to.
The Falcons, they finished tied for 29th in the league in terms of sacks. They had 28 on the year. Beasley's 8 sacks led Atlanta. Number 3 on the Big Four. We've got Super Bowl 55 odds out. Today they had the transition where they passed along the Super Bowl reigns from Miami to next year's site, Tampa, Florida. The odds. You ready for this, Aaron Gabriel? The Chiefs are your favorite. 7-1 odds to win next year. Right behind them, San Francisco and Baltimore with 8-1 odds. Do you want to take a guess who has the worst odds to win next year's Super Bowl?
The Carolina Panthers.
No, I'm sorry. It's not Carolina, who has 100-1 odds. There's only one team with worst odds.
The Cleveland Browns.
No, they actually 30-1 odds. People like Cleveland.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I'm just going to tell you who it is. How about that?
I suck at this.
The Washington Redskins with 200-1 odds to win Super Bowl 55. I'd hammer the Chiefs right now. Are you going to get anything better than 7-1? The Chiefs, they're about to rule things for the next 5 years. Excellent in three very important categories. Quarterback, coach, organization. And the organization part often gets forgotten, but it's rare that you see teams, even if they're talented, with poor ownership and a poor front office, go to the playoffs in back-to-back years. Like, look at Houston. They have so much talent. And in Bill O'Brien's time with Houston, despite Deshaun Watson being there, they haven't gotten past the second round. How about the Los Angeles Chargers? They were 11-5 in the 2018 season. This year, don't make the playoffs. Yet they're still extending Anthony Lynn, which I found to be interesting. That's Stan Kroenke, and that's a team that's going to be held back. No, wait. That's Dean Spanos, the other LA team that the other LA owner that owns the LA Chargers. Stan Kroenke and the Rams. That's another one that doesn't get talked about as much. They move out of St. Louis and they have that great year with Sean McVay, and now look where they're at. No draft picks, a running back with tendonitis in his knees, and not a very bright future outlook when it comes to the Rams. So we often forget about the organizational piece of it. The Chiefs have a great organization. It's the Hunt family. You got a great general manager. You got Andy Reid. You got Pat Mahomes, who's the youngest quarterback to win Super Bowl MVP. I don't think anybody in the AFC is going to be in their ballpark. And it is a good break that they are in the AFC versus the NFC, where you have, aside from Lamar Jackson, all the other young quarterbacks in decent spots. Russell Wilson, still relatively young. Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz, with decent rosters. I think I'd rather be in the AFC than the NFC today. Number two on the Big Four. The Hornets and Heels are back in action tonight. With only a two-day break, the Tar Heels will be playing number 8 Florida State in Tallahassee later on. Meanwhile, the Charlotte Hornets are hosting the Orlando Magic. Has that ever been an interesting matchup? I said before that when Charlotte plays Washington, that game has never been interesting one time. I think Charlotte has had interesting games with Orlando, because wasn't that the team Charlotte played when they made the playoffs the one time as the Bobcats? Like, the Bobcats made the playoffs one time. Wasn't that against the Orlando Magic when they had those runs to the NBA Finals? Dwight Howard, Hedo Turkoglu, J.J. Redick and friends. I think that does check out. Aaron, what are you more intrigued to watch? Orlando, Charlotte, or Florida State, North Carolina?
Man, that's like picking between taking out the trash or doing the dishes.
Well, which one's worse, dishes or trash?
Dishes is worse. I take Florida State, UNC.
The dishes are worse than the trash?
Yeah.
Oh, it definitely is, because one requires you to get up. Actually, they both require you to get up, but one you'll be done with after maybe 30 seconds to a minute.
Drop
the other
trash
one.
Trash in the bucket, it's done. The dishes, you're standing over the sink, your shirt is wet.
What is the most tedious chore for you?
Folding clothes.
Yes! I hate folding clothes and putting up. That's the one. Like, how long do you keep it in the hamper?
Oh, man, I got clothes that's been in the hamper for a year. What are you talking about?
I still have clothes sitting in a hamper that have never been hung up, probably.
Yeah, I got a clean clothes hamper. I just go digging through it for stuff I know is
clean. Oh, my gosh. And then just trying to find the matching socks. Brutal. Robert, you don't strike me as somebody who folds up and hangs their clothes with regularity.
No, I have like a chair in the corner of my room that I kind of just throw all the clean things on. And
then
I can rummage through that and find out what I want to wear.
You got that hanger chair.
Yeah. And then my room's hot enough that I can kind of hang anything up and get the wrinkles out. So it's nice.
How do you decide what you're going to wear a certain day? Because, Robert, I'm looking at you today, and this isn't exactly the greatest ensemble you have on.
Well, I do work in radio, and at its core, I really don't give a crap about what anybody here thinks I wear, so that works out.
And there's that.
All right.
I'm not trying to impress y'all or take any of y'all out on dates. Maybe DJ, he's kind of thick.
You want to go on a date with me?
I mean,
you know I'm a
fun
date.
He's not a homewrecker, though.
You know I'm a fun date.
Yeah, I'm not a homewrecker.
This is true. Point well taken.
That's what I'm saying. We all just became best friends with this issue, I think. We're all very aligned in this. Number one! On the Big Four today, a man is arrested for trying to pay a prostitute with a hamburger.
Wait, hold on a second. What kind of hamburger? Was there cheese? I need to know if there was cheese on it, and then I need to know where the hamburger was from for me to calculate whether it's worth it. Because
All right.
If it's from Five Guys, that's like a $30 hamburger.
It's a valid point. This is where the story gets stranger, in my opinion.
Oh.
It happens in Albuquerque, which surprises me because I thought with the timing of this headline and how the sex and entertainment industry tends to flock to the Super Bowl, regardless of where it's at. This would be something you saw in Miami. I was surprised to see Albuquerque, but the guy's name is Dominic Calderon, 36 years old, and he solicited sex with from a undercover police officer. And the officer was just trying to get him to try to...
Trying to elicit it.
You need to do that.
Hey, can I help you? Is there anything I can do for you?
So they agreed on a price, Calderon said he couldn't pay it because he didn't get paid from his job until Friday.
How does a cop arrest this guy? He feels so bad. He's just trying to get something on his break, man.
He then asked for her phone number so he could enjoy services later. Apparently, the officer noticed that Calderon was carrying a bag from Chili's.
Oh, my God.
She asked him what was inside.
No.
He told her that it was a hamburger. At that point, the officer proposed that her fee could be the burger instead of the cash. So it was the officer's idea, not his.
Okay, that should be legal. That's barter.
They got to let this guy go.
That's barter. I will start a GoFundMe for this man. He was trying to get out of there.
That's entrapment.
And... I have a story, but I don't even know if I can tell it. Not about me eliciting acts.
Now you gotta tell the story so we don't think it's something else.
Okay, so me and my brother went to a bar once for his birthday. No. He was 20 years old, okay. And I told him that we looked very similar. So I gave him my ID to get in with, and my buddy knew somebody working the door, so we were able to get in, no big deal. And it was like, I'll buy the drinks, don't worry, we'll handle it. And he's like, well, I'm kind of thirsty now, I want a water. Oh. So he walks up to the bar and he's like, hey, can I get a water? The guy's like, well, the beer's only $1. He's like, okay, let me have a beer. And he's like, well, let me see your ID. And my brother drunkenly hands him the ID and he catches him. He's like, that's not you. That's your brother. But like, he just wanted a water. This dude sold him the beer.
Yeah. He got.
Yep.
I think both of them got. Chili's Burgers. That might be the strangest detail here. Why are you getting a Chili's burger to go?
I don't know, man. Maybe he wanted to feel bad at home rather than feeling bad there.
Getting Chili's to go is already a crime in its own right.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that? And if you're getting Chili's to go, why get something that you could get quicker at so many other places?
Yeah, there's no way you can justify that burger being good later.
Clearly,
no
this
chance.
Man was having a hard time. He's just down on his
that's
luck.
That's why I feel bad for him. Yeah. Man, he's already ordering Chili's to go.
This
lady, he's like, I have no money. I can't buy this right now. And
somebody offered me a kiss for a hamburger. Hey, might be giving him a burger too.
I might be giving up a burger. That's what I'm saying.
Up next, trying to find a comp for Pat Mahomes and added historical significance to Super Bowl 54. Keep it on the drive.
You wanted to hear some great sports talk? Well, here it is.
Oh, what an appallingly ironic outcome.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
It's not ironic, it's just coincidental.
On Sports Hub Triad.
Leading by 11, gets the shotgun snap, rolls back, winds up, long arching pass, down the near sideline, zeros on the clock, the benches will empty. And this one is over. Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime.
That's how it sounded right here on Sports Hub Triad last night. Kevin Harlan on the call. And I just felt good for that guy, who was named the National Sportscaster of the Year for the second time in 3 years. Will be recognized in Winston-Salem this summer. Once upon a time, Harlan was the radio voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. He lives in Kansas City. I sent him a text last night, and it was just a really cool moment for him. Also for Mitch Holdis, who's been a longtime voice of the Chiefs as well. It probably would have been maximum cool if Green Bay had found a way to beat San Francisco and get to the game, because one of the best radio play-by-play men out there, other than Harlan, is Wayne Larrivee, who's the voice of the Green Bay Packers, who at one time, you guessed it, was the radio voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. So that would have covered the last 42 years of Chiefs football, radio broadcasters hold this, accepted the reins from Harlan, and Harlan took the reins over from Wayne Larrivee. But Kansas City, in the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years, wins it, having us thinking about the times in Super Bowl IV where Lynn Dawson smoking a cigarette at halftime, giving us a famous image, and you have Hank Stram telling his team to matriculate the ball down the field, boys. The man who called that game on television in 1970 was Jack Buck. And his son Joe, of course, called the game for Fox last night. So really cool, deeper nuggets when it comes to the significance historically of Kansas City beating San Francisco last night in the NFL's 100th season and 54th Super Bowl. Hot takes are welcome. That's it right now at 336-777-1600. It's a segment we call Let's Get Crazy. I want to change things up a little bit, Robert. Hot takes, that's not going to change. Throwing away journalistic responsibility and integrity just for a 10-minute stretch, that's remaining the same too. But instead of the hip-hop air horn, which we've used every single time playing this game, instead of rewarding the listeners with that, I instead want this to be the sound you hear when a hot take is delivered. It only seems right, and I'm gonna start us off. All right, fellas. You guys familiar with the Super Bowl hangover? The LA Rams not making the playoffs this year? Well, it's going to get the San Francisco 49ers too. San Fran not going to make the playoffs next year. The pressure is going to be on Kyle Shanahan to perform after blowing another Super Bowl. The pressure is going to be on Jimmy Garoppolo after he was exposed, in a sense, in those final 10 minutes. People were going to prepare for all that pre-snap motion all offseason. They're going to have a target on their back. And they're in a good division that had two other teams with winning records. Seattle gonna find a way to unseat San Francisco, and the Niners are not gonna get a wild card spot. San Fran in the Super Bowl for Super Bowl 54, but not in the playoffs in 2021. Robert, let's get crazy.
You guys, Breshad Breeland had a pretty good game last night, wouldn't you say?
Former Carolina Panther great.
Except for he wasn't, because he failed his physical in 2018. And I'm going to say, if he would not have done that, the Panthers would have gone to the Super Bowl.
Whoa! I've never heard of a corner making that type of an impact.
He made a big one with me when he did not sign with the Panthers. The Panthers. I'm not a fan of them. We've talked about this. You know that.
I don't think we've talked about this.
We have. They just keep pouting. That's what they're always doing, man.
Keep pouting?
Yep. Always pouting.
Oh, we lost Greg Olsen. Oh, Luke Kuechly left. Now we only have one sexy white guy.
Aaron, let's get crazy.
GMC has plans to unveil its electric Hummer pickup truck in May.
Yeah, I was watching that ad and expecting Tesla to pop up during the Super Bowl.
Yeah. It's like a sugar-free cookie. Nobody wants it. It's trash. Get it out of here.
Have you ever had a sugar-free cookie?
Absolutely not. I'm smart.
That's fantastic. One bet I knew was going to hit this weekend. I was 6-2 in the bet. One of the two I missed was the actual game with the 49ers. I bet on them to beat Kansas City. That didn't exactly happen, as we all know. Zion Williamson points and rebounds more than the completions for Jimmy G. Zion had 15-7 in the first half. He finished with 21-10. He didn't even really play that well against Houston. This guy, Zion, is going to lead the NBA in scoring next season. The offense is just built for it, man. Like, I don't know how you stop it. Once he catches it down low, it's a wrap. What's mattering at Duke is the same thing that mattered at Spartanburg Day, and it's mattering just as much in the NBA. Like, P.J. Tucker's a good defender, and Zion is just working him. If he's playing center, I don't know who's able to guard him. So I think these next couple of weeks, next couple of months, it's going to be us learning what Zion's capable of doing, and then they're going to further mold things around him for next season. And I think if he catches the ball down low with the lineup that forces teams to guard him with one man, that's going to be prolific. Zion going to lead the NBA in scoring.
Well, he's going to get a chance to figure that out. Don't they play like the Bucks tomorrow? We'll get to see Giannis playing against him.
Yeah. Is that going to be a TNT game?
I have no
idea. I hope so.
It's a TNT game. 7:30 tomorrow.
7:30 tomorrow night. Robert, let's get crazy.
XFL kicks off this weekend, and I'm going to go ahead and make a huge prediction. This radio station is a what? Isn't it? Don't we support some kind of?
We are a Houston Roughneck show.
Next.
Houston Roughnecks. Houston Roughnecks. Yeah.
All right. Well, they're going to be the Houston Softnecks as the Dallas Renegades win the XFL championship.
We hate Dallas.
I'm going with Bob Stoops.
Boo!
Me and Stoopy.
More like Bob Stupid.
Very mature one, Bill.
The kids didn't like that one. The Renegades going to win the XFL championship.
Why is that a hot take? They're the betting favorites. They're the betting favorites to win the damn league.
Aaron, next, your turn.
That was an awful take. Why are you giving yourself the Shakira noise when you didn't give a good take? Yeah, next year I got Kansas City to win the Super Bowl. Great take, Robert. Aaron, let's get crazy.
All right, last night, Patrick Mahomes did two things. He broke the Madden curse and also broke the prediction streak of the Simpsons.
Oh, that's right.
Moving forward.
Why is that the take?
More than Madden curse will be a thing. It's dead. It's over. It's kaput.
Hey, I like to hear that because Lamar Jackson's about to be on the cover of Madden next year.
He'll be fine because Patrick Mahomes did the work for him.
He did it.
Nope, that leads to my next hot take. Kobe Bryant is not just going to be on the cover of NBA 2K. He's going to be on the cover of Madden too.
Oh.
Didn't you have this take last week?
No, he said 2K.
He kind of remixed.
That is a terrible take. If my take about the Renegades was bad, that is just as bad.
It's a pretty damn hot take to say that he's going to be on Madden versus the favorite winning the freaking XFL.
Just because he's hot. Just because, like, that's hot. Like, doesn't mean that it's not bad.
It's kind of the point of the segment.
No, they still got to have tangible hot takes.
Well, I mean, it's pretty tangible.
All right, so when it doesn't happen, you have to buy me Madden. Deal?
No.
Deal.
We're not supposed to be bounded by these takes.
You interrupted the integrity of the game.
I'm excited to play the new Madden next year.
Yes, Aaron. Do you have anything to close us out with?
Gritty, the Philadelphia mascot's flyer, the Philadelphia Flyers mascot, was cleared of all charges. If you remember, he was alleged to have punched a small child in the back.
Saw that.
Well, they cleared him of all charges. But there'll be some new charges brought up against Gritty because we'll find out this dude is a mean dude and he's just in Philadelphia just causing trouble.
Oh. I thought you were going to say he's going to get me too'd.
Gritty's the one who threw the snowball with the battery in it in Philly.
Whoa! Man, I don't know how to talk about this next story. I really don't. So.
You're going to do it, ain't you?
I think we have to.
No, we don't, Josh.
Does anybody want us to go here?
No.
I mean, so.
He's going to do it anyway.
TMZ Sports, they just reported. This actually would be a really good tease, right? I'm going to cut this out. I'm not going to mention what the story is. I need more time to think about if we could actually talk about this. You guys don't want to do it.
No.
We're unanimous. No, we don't want to do this.
Well, we're going to do it anyway. Next.